My brother disappeared 10 years ago in a fire meant to kill us both. I rebuilt my life, new name, new country. But then a photo showed up. Him standing in the doorway of El Chapo's mother's house. Alive, watching me, luring me back. What started as a search for answers spiraled into a digital nightmare. Deepfakes, CIA blacklists, and a secret system called Cassandra, built to erase and replace people like me. Now, I'm not just hunted. I'm the weapon they tried to create. And I've got one shot left to bring them all down. Welcome to the skillful art of manipulation. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Secrets at El Chapo's Mother's Doorstep, a suspenseful encounter. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Package. They say memory is a slippery thing, fragile and frail, like a match flame in a hurricane. But some memories? Some don't fade. They sharpen. They sting. And they wait for you, right at the doorstep of the past you swore you'd never knock on again. It was just after noon when I received the envelope. The kind of day that fools you into believing things are normal. The sun was soft. The coffee shop was loud with chatter and the clatter of ceramic cups. Outside, street vendors shouted over one another, peddling knockoff perfume and churros soaked in sugar. But in my hands, everything else stopped. No return address. No postage. Just my name written in thick black ink. Lucia Marquez. My full name. Not Lucy. Not Lou. Lucia, the way only my family said it. The way my mother used to whisper it when she braided my hair at night. The way Diego shouted it, panic rising, the night the fire consumed our home and everything we were. The paper had a faint scent, old wood and something bitter, like dried blood and forgotten tears. I hesitated before opening it. My fingers shook, betraying the calm I forced onto my face. Inside, just one photograph. No words. No message. No fucking explanation. But the moment I saw it, I knew. I fucking knew. There she was, El Chapo's mother, standing outside her crumbling adobe home in the heart of Culiacan like some holy relic. Her back slightly hunched, hair wound into a tight gray bun, face lined with the kind of pain only mothers of kings and criminals know. And behind her, Diego, the brother I hadn't seen in 10 years. My knees buckled. I sat down hard in the nearest chair, chest caving in as my eyes locked on his face. It was him. Older. Hardened. The boyish mischief that used to dance in his eyes had died, replaced by something darker. Like he'd lived 1,000 lifetimes in hell. He looked like someone I loved. And someone I feared. Both at once. The picture was taken recently. I could tell by the faint graffiti on the wall behind him. A new cartel tag I'd read about in an article just last week. It hit me like a slow bullet. He never left. He stayed in the belly of the beast, while I built a new life pretending that beast didn't exist. I didn't notice the tears at first. They slid down my cheeks quietly, leaving trails of salt on my skin. I wiped them away before anyone in the cafe could see me crack. He was supposed to be dead. That's what they told me. That's what the fire meant. But here he was, on the steps of a woman whose name was a prayer and a curse in Mexico. Why was Diego standing at her door? The answer sat heavy in my gut like swallowed stones. There was only one way to find out. I didn't sleep that night. I sat in my apartment with the photo laid out on the table under a single flickering bulb, pacing, spiraling, replaying everything. The night we burned. The screaming. The smoke. The gunfire. The way Diego shoved me out the back door and screamed for me to run, his voice cracking like glass. I never looked back. Until now. By morning, I'd made my decision. I booked the next flight to Mexico City. One way. No baggage. Just the photo, a burner phone, and a heart that beat like a fucking war drum. I took back roads most of the way down to Sinaloa. Avoided tolls. Drove with one eye on the mirror. The rental car smelled like mildew and stale cigarettes, and the radio only picked up two stations. One playing rancheras from the 1950s, the other a government warning about missing persons. I chose silence. As I drove through the desert, the sky bled from orange to deep purple. Dust kicked up behind my wheels like ghosts trying to catch me. Culiacan appeared like a bad dream creeping up in the distance. Flat-roofed houses, power lines sagging low, and that unspoken hum of danger vibrating through the air. I parked 6 blocks from the house. I knew the street. I knew the neighbors. I'd walked it as a child with Diego when we used to sell tamales out of a dented metal cart to help Mama make rent. But nothing looked the same. The house stood like a monument to the past, cracked, quiet, and yet alive with something I couldn't name. I sat there for 2 hours, watching, waiting. The neighborhood was too quiet for dusk. No kids playing, no dogs barking, just the hum of electricity and the occasional distant pop, maybe fireworks, maybe not. At 8:46 p.m., a black SUV pulled up. Its windows were so tinted they reflected the sky. The engine didn't cut off, just idled, purring. The back door opened. A man stepped out. Dark suit, clean shave, scar that sliced through his top lip and down to his chin. He looked like a man who had killed with his hands, and preferred it that way. Then she appeared. Her, El Chapo's mother. She moved slowly, but each step commanded reverence. Even the man bowed his head slightly. She held out a single hand, and he placed a package in it, wrapped in brown paper, tied in red twine. Then, without a word, she pointed to the gate. He left, but the door behind her didn't close. It stayed open just a second longer, long enough for me to see him. Diego, still a shadow but closer now, standing behind her, watching me. A thousand thoughts collided in my mind. Was this a message? A threat? A warning? Or was it a summons? Because that's when I saw it. The way his eyes flicked. Not toward her. Not toward the SUV. But directly across the street. Directly at me. He knew I was there. And he let me see him. On purpose. My blood ran cold. This wasn't a reunion. This wasn't forgiveness. This was bait. And I had just walked right into the fucking trap. Chapter 2, The Knock. There's a moment, just before your fist connects with a door you swore you'd never stand in front of, when time slows to a crawl. Your heart kicks at your ribs like it's trying to escape your body. Your breath catches in your throat. Every nerve in your body screams, turn around, run. But I didn't. I knocked. Three sharp raps. Hollow and unsteady, like they came from someone else's hand. And then silence. No footsteps. No whispers. Not even the sound of a lock turning. Just the slow creak of ancient wood as the door opened half an inch. I waited. Seconds passed. My palms started to sweat. Then the door opened all the way, and the temperature seemed to drop 10 degrees. She stood there like a statue carved from bone and grief. Maria Consuelo Guzman. Her eyes were pale and heavy-lidded, but alert. Too alert. Her face bore the wrinkles of age, yes, but deeper than that, it carried the weight of history. She wasn't just a mother. She was the mother. Of a legend. Of a monster. Of a myth that bled across borders. And I was standing on her doorstep like a lamb that wandered into the lioness's den. Lucia Marquez, she said. Not asked. Not guessed. Stated. Her voice was soft, like silk soaked in gasoline. It could catch fire at any moment. Yes, I whispered, even though I hadn't said my name. She stepped aside. No welcome. No question. No smile. Just space. Enough for me to cross the threshold. I hesitated. One step. Two. Three. The air inside her home was thick with incense, smoke, and something metallic, like dried blood hidden in old wood. The house hadn't changed. Cracked tile. Virgin Mary statues staring down from every corner. Rosaries coiled like snakes around doorknobs. But underneath that was something new. Something wrong. Something watching. She gestured toward the couch, plastic covered, untouched, probably the same one she'd had since the 80s. I sat. She didn't. Instead, she walked to the small wooden table by the kitchen archway, opened a drawer, pulled out a manila folder, and dropped it on the table in front of me like a weapon. I didn't reach for it. Not yet. You want answers, she said, her back still to me. I didn't respond. You want to know why he's alive. Her voice was even, almost motherly. Why Diego stood beside me last night. The sound of my brother's name in her mouth made my stomach twist. You want to know if he betrayed you. She finally turned, her eyes locking on mine like a needle piercing skin. Or if you betrayed him. I swallowed hard. Where is he? She smiled for the first time. Not kindly. Predatorily. You'll see him, she said. But first, you need to understand. She sat across from me now, the folder between us like a loaded gun. She slid it forward with two fingers. Slow. Controlled. I opened it. Inside were photographs. Surveillance style. Some old. Some recent. Some shocking. There was one of Diego in a military uniform. Not Mexican military. American. Taken in what looked like a drone feed. Another showed him speaking to a man I recognized from a CIA leak years ago. A handler stationed in Caracas. There was one of me. Walking out of a bank in Los Angeles. I froze. These aren't just photos, I said, voice cracking. These are government assets. She nodded. He was never just a cartel boy, Lucia. He was a pawn. Then he became something more. A bridge. A betrayal. A ghost. I shook my head. This doesn't make sense. He wouldn't. He would, she snapped, her eyes sharp now, no longer soft. To protect you. He did things to keep you out of this. Things that cost him his soul. The room spun slightly. You don't get it, she continued. The government didn't just infiltrate us. We infiltrated them. This war? It's not between cartels and law enforcement. It's between liars who wear different uniforms. And Diego? He played both sides. Until one day, both sides decided they wanted him dead. My throat was dry. So he ran back to you. No, she said. I pulled him back. Because I'm the only one who could keep him breathing. And you're the only one who can decide if he stays that way. My pulse kicked. What do you mean? She stood again, walked to a cabinet, and pulled out a small leather satchel. Placed it in my lap. Open it, she said. I did. Inside were documents. IDs. A USB. A phone with no SIM card. A vial of dark liquid wrapped in cloth. What the hell is this? Insurance, she said. For what? She leaned in close. So close I could smell the eucalyptus oil in her hair and the faintest hint of gunpowder on her clothes. For the next move, she whispered. You don't get to ask questions anymore, Lucia. You just get to play. I clenched the phone in my fist. I didn't come here to play your game. Yes, you did, she replied. You just didn't know the rules. Her words hung in the air like smoke. And just then, the door opened again. Footsteps. Familiar. I turned. And there he was. Diego. Alive. Standing at the edge of the room like a ghost made flesh. His eyes locked on mine. Not warm. Not relieved. Just resigned. He said nothing. I said nothing. But in that silence, everything screamed. Chapter 3, My Brother's Eyes. When you haven't seen someone in 10 years, your mind does strange things. It doesn't just remember, it invents. Fills in the blanks. Builds a shrine out of fragments and half-buried memories. And standing there, watching Diego step into the room, I realized something awful. The man in front of me wasn't the brother I remembered. He was something else entirely. Something forged in shadows, fire, and betrayal. He didn't smile. Didn't run to hug me. Didn't say my name like a man relieved to find family again. He just stood there, arms crossed, jaw clenched, eyes scanning me like I was a fucking target. Lucia, he said finally. My name on his tongue felt cold. I rose slowly from the couch, my legs stiff. Diego. We stared at each other in silence. 10 years of unsaid things screaming between us like ghosts trapped in glass. He looked older, yes, but not just in the physical sense. There were lines around his mouth that came from gritted teeth and silence, not age. There was something haunted in his eyes, like he'd looked too long into a world that never looked back. He walked to the table and picked up the folder his new patron saint had given me. You shouldn't have come back, he said, flipping through the contents like they were receipts instead of pieces of a shattered life. Then why let me see you? He didn't answer. Typical. You were supposed to be dead, Diego, I said. They told me you died in the fire. He looked up then. Something flickered in his gaze. Guilt? Maybe. Maybe just exhaustion. I was dead, he said. To the world. To you. That was the point. My nails dug into the fake leather of the satchel still sitting in my lap. You left me. You were safer that way. You fucking left me, Diego. That did it. He dropped the folder on the table and exhaled sharply through his nose. You think I wanted to leave? That I had a choice? He laughed bitterly. Do you know what happens when you try to leave a cartel? When you try to run from the CIA at the same time? You don't get choices. You get orders. You get silence. You get to watch everything you love burn just so you can stay invisible. I stepped forward, the fury rising from my chest like bile. No. You get scared. You make excuses. You disappear so someone else has to live with the fucking ashes. He went still. Very still. You think I haven't lived with the ashes too? He whispered. I wanted to punch him. I wanted to hug him. I wanted to rewind time to that last night and drag us both out of the fire together. But none of that mattered now. What is this? I said, holding up the phone Maria had given me. What is this bullshit? Why now? Diego rubbed the bridge of his nose, suddenly looking exhausted. Because everything's unraveling, he said. And they need someone they can manipulate to clean it up. They, the Americans, the new factions. The ones trying to fill El Chapo's vacuum. They all want in. And they all think I'm the key. And what am I? The bait. He didn't answer. That told me enough. I saw you in the photo, I said. You were standing behind her like a dog waiting for orders. His mouth twisted. You have no idea what I'm doing here. Then tell me. I can't. Then fuck you. He flinched just a little, but enough to feel it. I came here because I thought you needed saving, I said. But you don't. You've made your choice. You're in too deep. He walked toward me then, slowly, deliberately, until we were nearly nose to nose. You don't understand, he said. This isn't about me anymore. It's about survival. Yours, mine, hers. Don't drag me into your war. You were already dragged in the moment that photo hit your mailbox. His words stopped me cold. You sent it. He didn't deny it. Why? I asked. Because you're the only one I can trust to bury me when this ends. I staggered back like he'd hit me. I'm not here to bury you. You might not have a choice. There it was again, that note of finality in his voice. The way soldiers speak when they already know they're not coming back. We were silent for a long time. Then, quietly, Diego reached into his pocket and pulled out another folder. Thinner. Older. He placed it gently on the table and slid it toward me. I opened it. Inside were old reports. CIA surveillance. Handwritten notes in Diego's script. Photos from before the fire. Before the betrayal. Pages about our father. About a failed smuggling op. About betrayal from within our own family. And one word that chilled me to the bone. Lucia, asset potential. What the hell is this? I whispered. You've been on their radar longer than you realize, he said. Even before the fire. Even before I disappeared. You think you got away clean? You think they didn't watch you? I couldn't breathe. They were grooming you, he said. They knew what you were capable of. Your brain. Your connections. Your silence. I was a kid. He nodded slowly. Exactly. A moldable one. I backed away, my world tilting sideways. I don't believe this. You don't want to, he said. That's different. He handed me a flash drive. You need to see what's on this. Tonight. Don't open it here. Don't let her know you have it. And for the love of God, don't trust anyone else. I stared at him. At my brother. At the traitor. At the protector. At the stranger. I don't even know who you are anymore, I said. His voice broke just barely. I don't either. And with that, he turned and walked out of the room, leaving me standing in the wreckage of everything I thought I knew. Folder in hand, past unraveling, future closing in like a noose. Chapter 4, The Drive. I couldn't stay in that house another second. Not with her eyes burning holes into my back from the next room. Not with Diego's words still ricocheting in my skull like shrapnel. Not with that flash drive pressed against my thigh like it was radioactive. I left the satchel. I left the folder. I didn't say goodbye. I walked out the door like I was still in control. Like I wasn't unraveling inside. Like the ghosts weren't walking beside me down the cracked sidewalk of a city that smelled like sin, sweat, and centuries of secrets. The second I hit the corner, I ran. Boots pounding on concrete. Heart thudding against my ribs. Hands clenched. Mind racing. The sun had already dropped beneath the horizon. The streets were painted in the colors of dusk, purple and gold bleeding into the bruises of night. Everything looked like it was holding its breath. Even the sky. I reached the car. Fumbled with the keys. Locked the doors the second I slid in. Started the engine with trembling fingers and pulled away from the curb like I was escaping a fucking war zone. Because in a way, I was. I drove in silence. No music. No talking. Just the hum of the engine and the white noise of my mind collapsing in on itself. My whole life, I'd believed I was the lucky one. The one who got out. The one who started over. New country. New name. New job. A clean slate. But now that slate was stained. Lucia, asset potential. They'd been watching me. Grooming me. Preparing me for what? What was on that drive? Why would Diego risk everything to give it to me? And then vanish again like a goddamn ghost. I drove past three motels before finally pulling into the parking lot of one that looked just shitty enough to be safe. Bulletproof glass at the reception desk. Mold climbing the corners of the stucco. And a smell in the air like something had died years ago and no one had the balls to clean it up. Perfect. I paid cash. Fake name. Fake smile. Room 109. The kind of place where the walls were so thin you could hear your neighbors fucking and fighting, sometimes at the same time. Where the TV only worked if you punched it. Where hope came to overdose and disappear. I double-locked the door. Closed the curtains. Pulled the bedside dresser in front of the window just in case. Then I sat on the edge of the bed with the flash drive in my palm, staring at it like it might explode. It felt heavier than plastic. Denser. Like it carried not just data, but consequences. Choices. Finality. I took out my old burner laptop, booted it up with shaky fingers. No Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth, no location services, just code, just silence. The second the drive connected, a folder popped up. Cassandra. I hesitated, then clicked. Inside, 3 videos, 2 PDFs, and 1 audio file labeled simply, "Don't trust her." My stomach dropped. I clicked the audio file first. Diego's voice filled the room. He sounded different. Raw, scared, rushed. Lucia, if you're hearing this, it means I've either disappeared or been compromised. Probably both. Maria isn't who she says she is. She's not just El Chapo's mother. She's been working with a third party, deep state, paramilitary, cartel-backed but with government clearance. This isn't about drugs anymore. It's about control, psychological warfare, media infiltration, digital propaganda. And you're part of it. Without even knowing, my blood ran cold. They've used your image, your voice, deepfakes, synthetic media. You were the perfect candidate. Bilingual, no criminal record, orphaned, vanished at the right moment. They created alternate identities for you, versions of you that exist online, underground, doing things you never did, speaking languages you don't speak, laundering money you never touched. I was shaking. They've built a web, Lucia. You're in the center. I tried to burn it. I tried to get out, but they threatened you. So I stayed. I became their shadow. But now it's collapsing. Too many eyes. Too many cracks. You have to run. Not just physically. Digitally. Kill your ID. Erase every trace. And whatever you do, don't believe a word she says. She wants to control you. And when she can't, she'll kill you. The file cut out. My breath caught. I stared at the laptop like it had grown teeth. I clicked on one of the videos. A surveillance feed. Grainy black and white footage. Time-stamped just 3 weeks ago. Me. Or at least someone who looked like me. Sitting in a sleek boardroom, dressed in a tailored suit, speaking fluent Russian. Except I don't speak Russian. I played the next video. Same woman. My face. Laughing on a yacht with men I didn't recognize. But one I did. A former finance minister who was found shot in the head 2 days after that footage was supposedly taken. The third video? Worse. A video showing me, walking through an airport in Istanbul, carrying a briefcase. Cut to a bombing that happened 20 minutes later. No direct evidence tying me to it. Just timing. Just implication. Just enough. I slammed the laptop shut and jumped to my feet, pacing the room. What the fuck had I stepped into? This wasn't just about Diego. Or me. This was about identity. Control. Erasure. They were rewriting who I was. They were making me a weapon. And now I was standing in the middle of a war I never signed up for. I stared at myself in the mirror, heart racing. Who was I? Who wasn't I? And what the hell was I supposed to do now? I grabbed my burner phone, dialed the only number I had for Diego. It rang once, then nothing. Disconnected. I tried again. Voicemail. His voice, recorded and distant. If you got this far, you're already too deep. You have one move left. Make it count. I threw the phone across the room. It cracked against the wall, pieces scattering like broken truths. I slumped against the dresser, chest heaving, brain on fire. I wanted to run. I wanted to scream. But instead, I started planning. Because if they built a false version of me, then I'd build a real one back. From the ashes. Chapter 5, Becoming Her. You'd be surprised how fast you can become someone else when survival stops being a concept and starts being a deadline. I didn't sleep that night. Not even for a second. I spent every hour dissecting the drive again, watching every frame of video, replaying every line of Diego's message until I could mimic his intonation, the strain in his voice, the kind of urgency that only comes from knowing you're already halfway dead. At 3:12 a.m., I made a decision. If they had created a fake version of me to manipulate the world, then I would become her. But this time on my terms. I started with the documents Diego left in the Cassandra file. Hidden inside one of the PDFs was a zip archive, encrypted but sloppily so. Someone got cocky. I cracked it open with a brute force tool I hadn't touched since my university days, hacking into outdated administrative servers to rig exam results for kids with coke habits and trust funds. Inside were hundreds of files, flight logs, meeting transcripts, cryptic surveillance metadata labeled with my alias. One document in particular made my stomach turn, a dossier titled Mirror. It described me in third person, as if I were an asset under review. Subject exhibits high memory retention, risk assessment instinct, strong facial reading skills. emotionally reactive under stress, but with coaching, could become a top-tier manipulator. I read it 3 times. They knew me better than I did. They had been studying me for years, tracking my social posts, my private emails, old voicemails I thought I deleted. They even documented how many times I cried in my sleep the first year after the fire. Who the fuck does that? I closed the file, breathed, steadied myself. They turned me into a story they could control. Now it was time for me to hijack the narrative. The next morning, I walked into a thrift store in the outskirts of Mazatlan, wearing a hoodie 2 sizes too big and sunglasses that swallowed my face. The shop was half clothing, half chaos, boxes stacked high, no real system, just colors and desperation. I found what I needed fast. A fitted black pantsuit. Vintage but sharp. A red silk blouse. A pair of matte black heels. And a mirrored compact with a faded monogrammed L on it. That felt like a sign. I didn't just buy an outfit. I was buying a persona. When I stepped out of that changing room, even the cashier blinked twice. "You got a meeting or something?" she asked. "No," I said softly. "A reckoning." Back at the motel, I stood in front of the mirror for a long time. I fixed my hair the way the woman on the yacht had it. Tight bun, slicked back severe. I outlined my lips in red like war paint. I added contour until the shadows on my cheekbones looked like blades. And then I practiced. Her voice. Her posture. Her unflinching gaze. I pulled up the Russian-speaking deepfake of myself and copied the tone. The rhythm. The arrogance. "Power is persuasion made invisible," I whispered, reciting one of the lines she said on the yacht. I said it again. And again. Until it sounded like it came from me. Maybe it always had. At 5 p.m., I left the motel. I had 2 destinations in mind. One was a data broker cafe in Culiacan that fronted as an internet gaming den. A digital cesspool. But beneath the neon lights and the sweat-slicked keyboards, hackers exchanged access to government servers like poker chips. I'd been there once before, years ago, when I was still searching for Diego. Now I knew I didn't need to search anymore. I needed to erase myself. Or at least her. Inside, I found the contact I needed. An old man named Tadeo with fingers stained from nicotine and eyes like a vulture's, sharp, cruel, but bored. The kind of man who only lifted a finger if it meant flipping someone else's life upside down. I slid the flash drive across the scratched tabletop between us. "I want everything on this wiped from every cloud, every darknet market, every backup node," I said, meeting his gaze. "And then I want her backtracked." He laughed. "You know how many zeros that costs." "I have crypto," I said. "Still not enough." "I also have this," I added, slipping a photo of the deepfake me beside a now-dead Turkish diplomat. "If this goes public with metadata tracing back to your server, you'll wish I'd just paid you." He stopped laughing. For the next 4 hours, I watched Tadeo and his team dig into the architecture of Cassandra. And what they found? Terrifying. The aliases built around me were hosted on interlinked platforms. Military contractors, shell corporations, private intelligence firms, and media bots designed to spread synthetic stories into real-world headlines. I wasn't just a ghost. I was a goddamn puppet. And someone else had their hand jammed up inside my life, making me dance. But now I was holding the scissors. I told Tadeo to set up a controlled breach. Leak false intel about Lucia Marquez, meeting with a rival cartel in Baja California. A soft nudge to flush out whoever was behind the Cassandra files. If they bit, I'd know who was watching. If they didn't, I'd just keep pulling at the threads until something snapped. Before I left, he handed me a burner phone preloaded with a scrambled alert system. "If this pings red," he warned Run. My second destination was a cathedral. Not for faith. For memory. It was the church where Diego and I had taken shelter the night after the fire. I sat in the very last pew, eyes trailing the faded mural of Saint Michael slaying the devil. Back then, I'd prayed for justice. Now I prayed for precision, because I wasn't the scared girl from 10 years ago anymore. I wasn't the manipulated ghost of a sister too traumatized to fight. I was the counterfeit queen they tried to create, rebuilt, repurposed, and now fully awake. I left the cathedral with new resolve. No more running. No more waiting. The next move would be mine. And if they wanted to bury me beneath layers of deception, manipulation, and fear, they'd have to dig deeper. Because now, I was becoming her. But this time, I was in control. Chapter 6, The Judas Frequency. There's a moment in every game of manipulation where the manipulator begins to wonder if they're the one being played. I hit that moment somewhere between my third burner phone and the sound of someone following me through the second alley of the day. At first, I thought it was paranoia. You spend enough time in motel rooms staring at yourself in the mirror, rehearsing identities you never chose, and you start thinking every car is watching, every glance is loaded, every cough is coded. But this wasn't paranoia. This was precision. Whoever was tailing me moved like someone trained to blend in. No sudden movements, no eye contact. A subtle shift between pedestrians. A tap here, a pause there. Someone who didn't need to hide behind corners because they were the corner. And worse, they smelled familiar. You don't forget scent, not when it's tied to pain. Or betrayal. Or memory soaked in gasoline. Earlier that day, I thought I had the upper hand. I sat in a dim cyber cafe behind the shell of an old tamale shop, watching Tadeo's network feedback real-time alerts to my burner. The Cassandra breach was working. The fake meeting I set up in Baja had been scraped by 10 different accounts within an hour, each with ties to different intelligence front orgs across four continents. They didn't just bite, they sank their fucking teeth in. An Israeli shell company had logged the metadata and traced it back to a Lucia Marquez, forwarding the hit to a defunct DEA field office. From there, the data was passed up through a Venezuelan counter-narcotics division and finally looped back through a dark web mirror, node owned by Blackridge Systems. My blood froze. Blackridge was a private security firm my company in the US had consulted with for a cybersecurity audit 2 years ago. My company, my clean slate, the life I thought I built on my own. They were never protecting us. They were profiling us. At 2:43 p.m., I walked into a decaying taqueria with peeling paint and a mural of the Virgin Mary half burned off the wall. I ordered nothing, just sat in the farthest booth with my laptop, headphones in, and loaded the last audio file Tadeo decrypted for me from the Cassandra drive. It was glitchy, distorted, but the voice was unmistakable. Maria, she doesn't know what she is. That's what makes her useful. The lie must be complete, she must believe it. Only then does she inspire belief in others. Control begins with conviction. My skin went cold. She hadn't just known. She had orchestrated it. If Diego makes contact, do not abort. Let him speak to her. Let her think he is the leak. He still believes he's protecting her. That's his utility. He's the tether. I slammed my laptop shut. The room spun. I stumbled out of the booth like I'd been gut punched. Diego wasn't saving me. He was delivering me. I walked back to my car in a daze, feeling the tectonic shift inside me. The floor cracking beneath every assumption I'd built my comeback on. He was never the ghost in the machine. He was the fucking key. Whether he knew it or not, Diego had been weaponized. And now so had I. That night, I checked into a different motel under a new name, Isabel Salgado. Fake ID, fabricated background, digital footprint erased with the help of Tadeo's data scramblers. I stood in the shower until the water ran cold, scrubbing at my skin like I could erase the version of myself that kept letting people in, kept believing that love could coexist with war. The memories came back like razors. The fire. Diego's scream. My name, shouted in the smoke. His arm around me. The shove. The back door. The escape. How much of that was real? Had he saved me? Or planted me? I sat on the edge of the motel bed wrapped in a towel, staring at a blank notepad like it might write the truth for me. Then I remembered something Diego said back in Maria's house. They think I'm the key. What if he was? And what if I still had access to the lock? I hacked into the last known Blackridge satellite network we'd accessed during our consulting days in Los Angeles. The protocols had changed, but muscle memory kicked in. There it was. A secure video feed titled Quill Session, Subject LM-12. I clicked it, and the screen filled with a live feed. It was Diego, strapped to a chair, eyes swollen, lips split, breathing, but barely. Maria stood over him, holding a file. My file. She's evolving too fast, she said to someone off camera. She's making moves we didn't program. That's a problem. That's a threat. A male voice replied, deep and distorted. Terminate the brother. Redirect the narrative. I didn't wait to see what happened next. I killed the feed, smashed the laptop, and screamed into my towel until my voice broke. They were done watching. They were ready to kill. Not just him. Me. At midnight, my burner buzzed. A single alert. Red. I ran. Threw my things into a bag. Left the laptop in shards. Burned my notepad. Left nothing behind but steam and dust. I headed to a contact I hadn't spoken to in 5 years, Santiago. A journalist turned whistleblower turned fugitive. The last time I saw him, He was getting the shit beat out of him by state police for leaking documents on CIA drone ops in Colombia. If anyone knew how to disappear and strike back, it was him. I found him in a tin shack buried deep in the jungle, lit by solar panels and paranoia. He opened the door with a pistol in hand. His eyes widened when he saw me. "Lucia," he whispered. "You're still alive?" I nodded. "Barely." We sat by candlelight, and I told him everything. About Diego. About Cassandra. About the digital identity war. About the fakes. About the feeds. When I was done, he just leaned back and said, "You know what this is, right?" "What?" "A trial run." "For what?" "Total erasure. Digital assassination. Political warfare. One day soon, they'll use this system on presidents, revolutions, entire ideologies. You're not just a pawn, Lucia. You're the prototype." That night, I didn't sleep again. But I didn't feel fear. I felt clarity. Because now I knew what I was. I wasn't Lucia Marquez. I wasn't a victim. I wasn't even an asset anymore. I was a ticking time bomb. And if they wanted to erase me, they'd better be ready for what gets unleashed when I explode. Chapter 7, The Reckoning. I used to believe revenge was about fire, about rage so consuming it turned your heart to ash. But standing at the edge of the jungle, boots buried in damp soil, backpack filled with more than just tech and weapons, something inside me had shifted. This wasn't about revenge anymore. This was about reclamation. Not just of my life, but of reality itself. They tried to manufacture a Lucia Marquez they could control. They tried to bury me under layers of fabricated truth, erase my face, and feed the world a puppet. But I wasn't theirs. And I never fucking was. Santiago gave me 3 days. That's how long it would take to scramble the IPs, create the synthetic facial double, and reroute satellite surveillance away from the extraction site. We were going back to her. Maria, the High Priestess of Deception. The woman who played governments like chess and children like cards. The matriarch behind the myth. She didn't just protect the house that built El Chapo. She built the house. And Diego, he was the offering. And I was done praying. The journey back into Culiacan was like threading a needle through a hurricane. We took unmarked roads that existed only on smugglers' maps. Changed cars 3 times. Slept in graves once. Yes, actual graves camouflaged under fake tombstones in a narco-run cemetery Santiago had a key to. By the time we reached the outskirts of her estate, my ribs ached, my skin was caked in mud, and my heart pulsed like it remembered every trauma it had ever absorbed. But my mind was fucking clear. We arrived just after midnight. No moon. No noise. No mercy. Her estate had new guards, American by the look of their equipment. Night vision goggles, suppressed MP5S, comms that chirped with encrypted bursts every 6 seconds. I watched from a thicket of dying palms as Santiago activated a jamming beacon, the signal flooding their receivers with white noise. 2 guards peeled off to investigate. They didn't come back. We slipped inside like shadows. I knew the layout. I knew where she kept her real safe. Not the one bolted behind the Virgin Mary in the living room. The other one. Behind a false wall in the study, disguised as an altar to St. Jude, the patron of lost causes. How poetic. We found Diego in the basement. Or what was left of him. He was strapped to a medical gurney, tubes feeding into his arms, his shirt soaked in sweat and blood. Monitors beeped in rhythmic defiance. But his eyes were open, and they found mine the second I entered. "Lucia," he croaked. "It's not too late." I walked over, placed my hand on his, and whispered, "Yes, it is." He didn't fight me. Didn't beg. He just nodded, like he'd been holding that nod for years, saving it for this exact moment. "I'm sorry," he said. "I know," I replied. "But I can't forgive you." I pulled the 4 out of his arm, blood blooming like a rose. He winced, but didn't flinch. Santiago started downloading files from the nearby computer. Surveillance logs, communication chains, full schematics of the Cassandra framework. "This is bigger than I thought," he muttered. "Maria didn't just run Cassandra. She was Cassandra." I looked at Diego. "Where is she?" His eyes flicked toward the ceiling. "We found her in her study. Alone. No guards. Just a teacup in one hand and a small revolver in the other, resting in her lap like an old friend." "You're early," she said without looking at me. "You're finished," I replied. She laughed, low and dry. "You sound just like him. Full of fire. Full of righteousness. Like you've never done anything ugly in the dark." "I've done plenty," I said, stepping closer. "But never to children." She raised her eyes then. Cold. Regal. "We don't protect children in this business, Lucia. We mold them." My jaw clenched. You used me. I shaped you. You turned me into a digital fucking weapon. And yet, look how well it turned out. I drew my gun. She didn't move. Santiago entered behind me. We have everything. Files. Logs. Evidence. We can expose her. Maria just smiled. No, you won't. Try me, I said, thumb cocking the pistol. She sipped her tea. You still don't get it. Cassandra isn't just a system. It's an idea. It's self-replicating. Kill me, and another takes my place. Erase this house, and five more rise in its ashes. I am not the queen. I am the echo. I don't give a fuck what you are, I said and pulled the trigger. One shot, right between her eyes. The teacup fell from her hand and shattered on the floor. The gun never left her lap. We burned the estate. Not for vengeance. For cleansing. We left Diego behind, unconscious in a truck, with just enough adrenaline to survive and enough information to destroy everything. I didn't speak during the ride out of Culiacan. Neither did Santiago. We both knew what we'd done, and what was coming next. By morning, every file from Cassandra had been uploaded to 27 mirrored servers across the globe. With Santiago's help, we activated a timed leak schedule. Every hour, a new thread. A new name. A new truth. Slowly unraveling the network they built. By noon, I was a fugitive. By sundown, I was a myth. 2 weeks later, I stood on a balcony in Lisbon under a name I'd never worn before. The sea stretched endlessly in front of me. Quiet. Unbothered. The news played softly inside. Stories of government denials, digital hoaxes, unfounded conspiracy theories about deepfake identities and assassinations gone rogue. They could bury the truth all they wanted. It was out there now. Cassandra was dead. And me. I was alive. Reborn. Not as Lucia Marquez. Not as a ghost. But as something else entirely. Something they could never erase again. Real.